I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful autumn, October 5th. It is the 5th, isn't it? Anyway, I am live today, and I'm live every day in my mind, but on this show, it's live. It's happening right now if you're listening right now, and if you're not listening right now, it's another right now for you. And I'm also video, so if you're on the Progressive Radio Network right now, you can click on the video in addition to the listening to, or separate from the listening to, and I'm waving hello on the screen. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me today. What do we do on It's All About Food? We talk about food, my favorite subject. And for those that are listening, it's so important that we all do what we can to make this world a better place, and we can do it every time we eat. It's such a beautiful, empowering thing. And many people out there are doing different things to get this message out there, and it's so important to get the message out, and we're all working against big media and government and everything that wants us to eat foods that aren't good for us and do things that aren't going to be the best for us. So all of us out there, we're doing our part. And I'm talking to two wonderful people today that are doing their part. And first up, we are going to be talking with Tracy Lynn McWhorter. She's a speaker, author, and 20-year vegan who helps people achieve extraordinary health through better food choices. She directed the nation's first federally funded vegan nutrition program and worked on legislation to improve nutrition guidelines. McWhorter has been featured in the Washington Post, Ebony, and Essence, and has been a guest on NPR, Fox 5, NBC4, and many others. She was a contributing writer for Heart and Soul magazine and a nutrition consultant for the Black Women's Health Imperative. McWhorter is a graduate of Amherst College and New York University, where she received her Master's of Public Health Nutrition. She's the author of By Any Greens Necessary. We're going to be talking a bit about that today. And she lives in Washington, D.C. Welcome to It's All About Food, Tracy.
Hi, Karen. It's great to be here.
Gosh, you have no idea. I've been following you around for a long time and following your work, and I'm so excited to be able to talk to you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, the first thing I learned when I looked at your book, which came out last year, but the information is so important today more than ever.
Absolutely.
Is that we both became vegan in 1988.
Ah, okay, excellent. Long time.
A long time.
Yeah, we're both going on about 25 years, I guess.
That's right. And, you know, we all have a different story, and I think every story is worth hearing because we're trying to share this information with people, and people need to hear things over and over again sometimes in order to get it sink in and let it work, and sometimes one story resounds better than another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would you like me to share mine?
I sure would.
Okay. Well, I actually was introduced to vegetarianism in the seventh grade here in D.C. at Sidwell Friends School. I went there from third through 12th grade, and our seventh grade teachers decided that our class camping trip should be all vegetarian. Two of my three teachers were vegetarian.
Wow.
So I thought this was a horrible idea, and I wrote a petition and tried to get my classmates to sign it to protest this, and I was, you know, overruled. Only a couple of my friends signed it, and so we had what I considered a horrible camping trip because we had, vegetarian food, peanut butter and honey sandwiches on whole wheat bread and fruit juice and granola.
Mm-hmm.
So I never gave it, vegetarianism, a second thought after that. And fast forward 7 years, and I was a sophomore at Amherst College, as you mentioned, and our Black Student Union brought Dick Gregory to campus to talk about the political, economic, and social state of Black America.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he talked about the basically how unhealthfully most Black folks eat. And so I immediately thought back to my seventh grade teachers. I thought Dick Gregory was crazy too, like them. And I tried to tune him out, but what got me about his talk, he spoke for about 2.5 hours, was, wow, was that he graphically traced the path of a hamburger from a cow on a factory farm to a fast food place. I'm sorry, well, a cow on a factory farm through the slaughterhouse process to a fast food restaurant, to a clogged artery, to a heart attack. And I do mean graphically, and I had never heard anything like that before. And I have to say that at that time, as a sophomore in college, I was questioning a lot of things about oppression and racism and sexism and homophobia and capitalism and all of these things, all of these isms. And so I was open to questioning my food choices as well. I didn't realize that, but apparently I was. And so after his lecture, I immediately gave up hamburgers and hot dogs for about a week and basically went back to eating meat because I thought it was too difficult, but I couldn't get what he said out of my mind. So I went home for that summer a few months later and read everything I could in the Library of Congress and the main library in D.C. about vegetarianism, and my mother and my middle sister did the same, and by the end of the summer, we decided to become vegetarian.
Wow.
That's basically what happened, and it took me about another year and a half to go vegan after that.
You bring up so many different things I want to talk about all at once. So it seems like you were an activist from very early on, and maybe you weren't an activist about what you're an activist about today, but you did have this focus and this energy in you to speak out.
Definitely, yes, absolutely. I mean, I thought, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because not too many people have asked me that, but it's very true. I do see myself as an activist, and I've always wanted to be some type of activist. I thought I was going to be a civil rights lawyer or an ACLU lawyer or a judge or a journalist, you know, I love to write. So I always saw myself as doing activist work for forever. And so this is I never saw myself actually getting into nutrition and promoting veganism, you know, but this is, I do see this as activism for sure.
Yeah, it's making me think, it's a funny thing that there are probably a number of people that are activists by nature and want to speak out, but because they don't have the right information, they're pounding the drum for the wrong thing.
Okay.
But
yeah,
anyway,
I mean,
I'm glad you're
true
on this path. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So then another thing, you were learning about all these different isms in college, and I think they're all related.
Oh, yeah. I think that they're definitely linked. And that's one of the things that drew me to vegetarianism and veganism, because of the way that I was introduced to it. I mean, Dick Gregory talked about being, you know, an activist in the civil rights movement and how the nonviolent philosophy of the movement impacted his, you know, basically influenced his decision to become vegetarian and then vegan. I mean, you know, Alvinia Fulton from Chicago, you know, other folks directly influenced him, but that ideology really made a huge difference for him. And I think when I came, I took my junior year away from Amherst, and I went to Kenya for the first semester and then Howard University here in D.C. for the second semester, and it was there at Howard that I was introduced to this large African-American vegan community that I did not know existed, even though I was born and raised in D.C. And all of these issues were linked for them. And this is how I learned about how to become vegan and why to become vegan. So all of these isms are definitely linked to me.
Yeah, well, the whole vegan movement is so important to me because I think it solves all the world's problems pretty much. And I think it's a lot for people to chew, no pun intended.
Right.
A lot of people take up a cause and they feel really passionate about it, and it could be so many different things, a difficult disease, looking for the cure, or some particular issue related to civil rights, mm-hmm. or different countries in turmoil, whatever it is. And I really think when you, it comes down to it, eating plant-based foods will solve most problems.
Yeah, it touches everything, for mm-hmm. sure. I mean,
it may sound so simple, but it is.
Yeah. But it's actually quite profound in its simplicity, and mm-hmm. I think that is what people come at it. People enter veganism from different places, as you know, and I think that the fact that a person may enter for animal rights reasons or environmental reasons or health reasons, you know, the different ways that spiritual reasons, the different ways that people enter, they're all wonderful reasons. They're all valid, and they're all linked, whether the person knows it or not. They're touched by. They're touching, you know, all of these other avenues. And so for me, you know, that's how I entered it, but I kind of, I talk to people where they are. And for me, my experience is that most of the people that I get to talk to are interested for health reasons. And they're about the food, you know, and the food making them healthy. And so that tends to be, and that's where I entered. That tends to be mm-hmm. my focus. About 10 years into being vegan, I got into the animal rights advocacy issue. And I'm happy about that because it took me 10 years to get to that.
Well, I'm really grateful that there are so many people coming to this subject from so many different angles, because
exactly.
we need every angle possible, and different mm-hmm. people are going to hear the message in a space that they're comfortable with.
Right,
and so
exactly.
I'm not a religious person, but I am thrilled that there's a Christian vegetarian society and a Jewish vegetarian society and things that talk to people that are following those philosophies and religions, and the same thing with different cultures, different age groups. And so mm-hmm. your book, By Any Greens Necessary, is a revolutionary guide for black women who want to eat great, get healthy, lose weight, and look fat with a PH. So you're, in this particular book, appealing to a very specific community.
Well, yes, I'm definitely targeting black women, for sure. And I'm doing that because I want to do it, and also because...
Oh, we need it. We definitely need it.
Yeah, everyone needs to be, every group, you know, every demographic definitely needs to be targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to target black women because why not? We're fabulous, but also we happen to be experiencing some really serious health issues. We're in a health crisis in a number of areas, and so I wanted to directly appeal to black women to say that many of these chronic diseases that we're dealing with, heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, overweight, obesity, are diet related, and you know, to get the information is the bottom line, and then you can decide how you choose to use it. But I have found that, you know, talking to people for 20 plus years about veganism is that once people get the information, they tend to make some type of change right away because they have not heard this information before. They realize that they have been misinformed. And they want to do something. So whether it's adding, you know, more fruits and vegetables or more whole grains or deciding to go vegetarian and then vegan or, you know, something, I find that people make a change right away, even if it's just reading more about it. And I'm really inspired by that.
Does it blow you away sometimes after doing this for so many decades that there are still people that find this information new and surprising?
Yep.
Every day I say, oh,
yeah.
I don't need to do this anymore. Everybody knows. And then, I meet so many people. And I wonder, are they really hearing this information for the first time, or did they not want to hear it before? But for whatever reason, people need to hear things over and over and over.
Yeah, and, people are at different points in where the place where they hear it. You know, I heard about it in seventh grade and dismissed it. You know, a lot of, but a lot of kids, a lot of, you know, tweens and teens,
they're ready
college
for
students
it.
Are real, you know, they're getting into it. I just wasn't ready to hear it at that time. I, you know, it took me 7 more years to hear it. So, you know, definitely it needs to be repeated. But yeah, you know, I my next book is actually going to be talking about, my reflections, my thoughts on veganism, you know, the, for after 25 years, these past 25 years, because I have seen a lot of changes in, and I have had some frustrations around it that I want to talk about, mostly joys, but, you know, some frustrations and challenges too. But I think, you know, I compare it to the cigarette, ban, you know, the movement around cigarettes, which, you know, of course, you know,
it took
50 years for that groundswell to happen. And I think that, you know, we're in the middle of that. It is definitely going to happen that most people are vegan, and it's just going to be like breathing.
Yep.
That's definitely coming.
I'm looking forward to that, and I hope I live long enough to see it.
But I think we will.
But, but being vegans, we have a good chance of that.
Absolutely.
Of living longer. You mentioned in your book, a study in the New England Journal of Medicine showed that blacks develop heart disease and die at an earlier age than all other groups. That's really something, because already Americans and other countries now are, we're having this epidemic with heart disease and diabetes, and it's hitting all
right.
of us. But why is it hitting the black community even more so?
Well, there, you know, it's heart disease and breast cancer. We get it. You know, black women tend to die of it quicker than white women do, and we get diagnosed with it later. So there, you know, it kind of happens with other issues as well, other diseases. But basically, you know, it's not it's an issue of, to me. It's an issue, it's an economic issue. It's an issue of food availability. You know, first of all, people are misinformed. You know, that we are, the food industry and the USDA, do not inform us about the healthiest foods to eat. That's the issue. That's the problem. So number one, we're misinformed. And then when we are informed, when we're lucky enough to get the information about vegan plant-based foods, it's not available in our communities. Most black folks are poor or low income.
Yep.
And we just don't have the access to healthy foods. And, you know, Michelle Obama's talking a lot about food deserts in her Let's Move campaign, and it's just true. We don't have access to it when we do know about it. And what we have access to is plenty of junk food, corner stores, fast food places. So it's an issue of information and economics, and that really takes a toll on us, you know. And so for me, it's not just, you know, promoting veganism on a, you know, individual basis, even, you know, through organizations, but it has to be a government, it has to be a governmental response. And I think that that's coming.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that need to change, certainly.
Yeah.
I want to say that I read a lot of books on the vegan diet, and I read yours and loved it. By Anna Green's Necessary. I really, really did, and for lots of reasons. And I read, I'm glad that so many of them are out there, but some of them are not very good.
I appreciate that compliment, and I am a writer first, so that I really do appreciate that. I really tried.
It's calm, it's straightforward, it's real, and, you know, I don't think it... I know it says it's for black women, but it's really for everyone, and there's so many good points in here, and I just wanted to pick up a few of them. So one of them is where you talk in the very beginning about the government with the food pyramid, which is now the My Plate. And they're encouraging people to eat proteins, especially the ones that are low fat and lean. And you say dry beans are naturally lean and low fat, so it's absurd to include them in the same category. And you know, it's just something. I'm a big promoter of beans, but I never saw it put that way, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, I'm it's definitely true, and I may have, you know, I did a lot of research for this book, so hopefully if that I either got that from myself or, you know, someone else.
Right.
But,
well, whoever gave
sure.
it, whatever.
But whoever.
It's
wherever
good.
It came from, it's definitely true.
It's good.
I mean, there's a lot of information about, you know, there's a lot of response to this protein equals meat issue, and it's just ridiculous.
Right. You write this little conversation here. Honey, what's for dinner? Baked saturated fat, dear. Great. How about dessert? There's a pint of chocolate cholesterol in the freezer. I mean, come on. Let's get some commercials like that going. I love it.
Thank you. Maybe I should talk to Peter or PCRM about that.
Yeah, well, you know, you talk a bit about advertising, and mm-hmm. I personally, that's like number one on my list. I think if we can shift the advertising dollars and if the government could shift the subsidy dollars from mm-hmm. the unhealthy foods to the healthy foods, and we start seeing media talking about what's good for us rather than what's bad for us, things will change so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And that's the other issue, you know, There was another study that came out recently. I just read that food advertising is heavily in the junk food advertising,
mm-hmm.
which is the majority of it.
Yep.
It's, you know, heavily targeting kids of color, and kids of color watch more TV than other kids, and which means that families are watching it as well. And so that's another issue, you know, that we're being targeted with these horrible images and these, you know, these horrible messages about food.
Well, I definitely believe in shifting the tax structure where these foods that aren't good for us should be highly taxed, so it's not affordable and it's not profitable. Because when organic broccoli and apples become profitable and affordable, people are going to eat them and we're going to see more ads for them.
That's true, but it's also relative, you know, and I tell people that, you know, that there's this knee jerk that organic and healthy food is expensive. Yes, it can be. It often is, but it doesn't have to be. If you buy in bulk and, you know, and a few more tips I have in the book, but, you know, a bunch of collards or a bunch of kale organic costs $2.49
yeah.
or $2.99 a
yep.
pound.
Yep.
You know, and you can eat off of that for 2 days or 1 day for a family of four. And that's not that expensive, you know, and getting beans and some whole grains in bulk, not that pricey.
You put dried beans next to any dollar meal or any fast food meal, and you're going to be saving tons of money. Dried beans win in any scenario.
Exactly. Throw them in a an electric crock pot on the counter, cook them while you're at work or doing something else, and get some great recipes for them. And you're golden. You know, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left. I want to talk about chicken. chicken, the feathered vegetable.
Right.
You have here in your book, ladies, eating chicken does not make you black, it makes you blocked.
Yeah, I had to put a whole separate chapter about chicken on there because that's just, you know, I say in there that that's the thing people say to me. I can't give up my chicken, as if we're attached to the hip, you
mm-hmm.
know, the chicken. And, of course, it's a culturally significant food. You know, it's part of soul food culture. I get that. But it's unhealthy. And, you know, chitlins are a part of it, and, you know, ribs are a part of it. All of these things that I ate growing up but came to realize are not healthy
mm-hmm.
and not worth it. And so, yeah, I just think that, you know, people, the interesting thing, Karen, is that people will say, you know, I'm a vegetarian, and then if you probe a little further, just ask one or two more questions, they'll say, well, you know, I eat chicken. I only eat chicken and fish.
Right.
So, dwindling
what
down.
What makes that okay? I mean, people got the message
right.
that red meat is bad, but there's still,
right.
and people really think fish is a great thing.
I know, but just in these 2 decades, you know, nobody is saying that they should eat these foods. They just say, yeah, I still eat these foods, you
yeah.
know. So there's been a shift, I shouldn't say nobody is saying that they shouldn't, that they should, eating chicken and fish, because they do believe that it's healthy. But what I'm trying to say is that there's this understanding that there are other options out there than meat for protein. And so, I think that is going to become more and more, people are going to become more and more conscious of that. In another 10 years, they're going to drop the chicken. Probably in another 5 years, they're going to drop the fish. You know?
You think milk will be last to go?
Oh, gosh. Milk is
which is the worst, right?
Milk is a monster. Yeah. Dairy, for sure. It's definitely, they're all going to go. They're all going to go. And it's just going to be, there will always be people who eat it, just like there are people who smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hard for me to come to terms with, but cigarette smokers understand what they're doing, and meat and dairy eaters will understand what they're doing, and they may choose to do it. And there may be nothing we can do about that, but it's
right.
going to be that they're in the minority, not the majority.
You have some statistics in your book from the U.S., is this from the USDA? Anyway, they're, the percentages of people who are lactose intolerant, and I love telling people this because it's just mind-blowing. So 90% to 90% of Asian Americans are lactose
mm-hmm.
intolerant, 95% of Native Americans, 60% to 75% of African Americans, 50% to 60% of Latinos, and 10% of European Americans. Okay, there's a lot of people can't drink
most
milk.
Most people in the world, yeah. I mean, that's the majority of the world's population. That's a lot of people for the USDA.
And yet we're cramming it down all of our school children, and they have tummy aches, and it makes it harder for them to learn, and it's criminal.
Yeah, and it's basically, the USDA helping the milk and dairy industry to promote it.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's where the groundswell has to happen, and it's happening.
Right. I'm just thumbing through the book here, and another thing I pointed out, when you talked about some people who used to be vegan, but they were so anemic they went back to eating meat, and I hear that all the time, and I know that if I was feeding those people, they'd still be vegan, and they'd be feeling great.
Yeah, as if drinking blood, through meat is
mm-hmm.
the answer to, anemia. But, it raises a point in that just because it's vegan doesn't mean it's healthy. You have to be a healthy vegan.
That's
not
right.
A starter
Coca-Cola
dairy, not a
and potato chips. I was talking to someone today
are
who,
vegan.
Who
exactly.
said, I really wish I could get my potato chips without salt. stop the potato chips, period.
Yeah, exactly. So, you have to know what you're doing, and it doesn't take a lot to know what you're doing.
Tracy, thanks so much for joining me. What's your website?
ByAnyGreensNecessary.com.
Great. ByAnyGreensNecessary.com. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking with you. I probably could talk for many more hours with you, and maybe we'll have another opportunity.
I would love it. Thank you so much,
Karen. Okay, thank you. Look forward to your
Bye-bye.
Next book. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a quick break, and while we do, check out my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Lots of recipes and great stuff up there. We'll be right back with Marisa Wolfson-Miller and her documentary, Vegucated.